Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Friday, 4 July. US markets are closed today for Independence Day. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa, via remote Free State studio. On a programming note, I am off next week, heading to warm beaches of KZN. Dudu Romala will be hosting the show. Today we've got Craig Antoni, CEO, Ambro Capital Investments, managing drawdowns, but I also want to pick his brain, alternatives for AI investing that aren't NVIDIA. Thomas Brennan from Frank, we're into the 24th year of savings month, but we're still not saving. We're also going to dig into emergency funds. Thoughts from me on Hyprop exiting Hyde Park Corner, the deal structure, and what of Rosebank Mall. This podcast is brought to you by Standard Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, BMW SA not exposed to current US tariff uncertainty, but group says bilateral trade agreements with the UK, Europe and US are essential to the future of vehicle production in South Africa. Business Day, Dis-Chem's growth plans runs up against space crunch and competition. Failure to open new stores promptly may impede growth, they say in their annual report. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.8%, NASDAQ a 1% higher. East mostly red, we've got Sydney down 0.3%, Tokyo's up 0.1%, Hong Kong down 0.9%, and Tencent off 0.6%. Commodities are red, gold futures 3,338, Brent is 68.55, platinum 1,385, palladium 1,147. The rand is 17.53, Bitcoin 109,200, and top 40 opening call 170 points to the green, 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Craig Antoni, CIO, Ambro Capital Investments. Craig, appreciate the time today. You and I have chatted many times over the years, including during the bear market of 22. Of course, we had the massive April sell-off more recently. As an investor, I mean, how do you sort of look at those bear markets? Because to be perfectly honest, the right thing to do was absolutely nothing. It's easy for me to say that in hindsight. At the time, though, it gets difficult, or maybe not when you're a professional.
Well, hi there, Simon, and hello to all the listeners out there. I mean, you're 100% correct. You know, during times of stress, you know, things can get a little bit hazy out there and it can make people nervous and uncomfortable. But as all long-term investors know, you know, markets can fall and they do fall. However, they do rise more than they fall, and they rise a lot over the long term. So you just need the courage to stay the course and, importantly, keep investing when markets are falling, which can feel counterintuitive and stressful at the time. But I mean, oftentimes the best buying you'll ever do will be during those times of stress.
Yeah, I think of NVIDIA, which was $140 and then, what, $95, and now it's $155. I suppose part of that is really knowing your mandate and your investment strategy and what you're looking for. For example, your Titans fund, your unicorn funds, they've got clear mandates and ideas behind them.
Well, exactly right. I think, you know, having a focus on or a clear focus on what your mandate or your strategy is helps you maintain composure in all types of markets. Of course, it's much easier when the tide is rising. It's easier to do that way. But I mean, the real secret sauce is, you know, is to keep this up during the more turbulent times because it keeps you from being reactive and ensures that you stay focused and stick to your plan. And I mean, as you say, I mean, in our portfolios, we do have several different themes. And, you know, it's important to make sure that you clear on those themes, you know, when things are going haywire.
And I liked your point. You know, it's that upside. And I always say to folks, as an equity investor, if things go horribly wrong in an individual stock, yes, it could go to zero. But of course, your upside is literally multiples of that. And that is more of that secret sauce for the long-term investor, is that your upside is uncapped if you get it right.
Well, exactly right. You know, and that's why it does, I mean, it does pay to, you know, to take the time and the effort to do your homework and make sure that, you know, you do know what you're buying and you understand the risks involved. I mean, sometimes also the volatility involved. I mean, you know, something like our unicorn portfolio has done very well over the years, but it's incredibly volatile. You know, so, you know, one has to understand, you know, not just the risk, but the volatility and make sure that, you know, you're invested in the right sorts of stocks or portfolios that match your own risk profile and appetite for volatility.
and quality. That's probably a underlying theme to it, which is, I mean, I appreciate, you know, the private investors, there's some small caps out there. It often just comes back to, if you own the right quality companies, it makes it that much easier.
100%. I mean, you know, just because the company's small doesn't mean there's no quality out there. And one's got to make sure that even when you're looking at an investments of small or large size, that, you know, they tick certain boxes. And for us, we clearly are looking at things like, you know, strong balance sheets, you know, strong management teams, you know, cash flows, you know, whether you're along the sort of mature or the growing phase, you know, there has to be line of sight to, you know, where the business is going and its ability to get there.
Shifting gears slightly, I referenced NVIDIA a moment ago. That obviously gets all the hype around AI. I want to pick your brain a bit around sort of what other stocks you could look at as part of the AI boom. I mean, we could go up and down the value chain. There's the ASMLs and TSMCs. There's the Alphabets and the Microsofts. When you're looking at AI very broadly, where else are you looking aside from the obvious poster child, which is NVIDIA?
Well, you know, as a side note, you know, I'll mention that our unicorn portfolio has taken on more of an AI tilt in recent times, because we do think that, you know, this trend is still in its infancy. But as you rightly said, Simon, I mean, most companies, you know, or most investors rather, place their emphasis in AI and company like NVIDIA, because, you know, they help facilitate AI and are arguably the first stop on the AI journey. But as you rightly said, I mean, there's a lot more out there to investing with regards to this theme. And what we've done in our model is we've actually broken AI down into multiple subcategories. You know, so the one category is what we refer to as the trailblazers, you know, and these are companies that spend considerable amounts of time, money, and research on AI. And NVIDIA falls into that sort of category for us. You know, then there are those which we like to refer to as the AI utilizers. And here, you know, we look for companies that use AI, either to improve products or services that they use or provide. And you can think of companies that use it to, say, you know, streamline processes, improve procurement, you know, cut red tape or improve turnaround times, that sort of thing. And here, you know, something like Uber, you know, falls into that category for us. Another subcategory we look at is the AI authority, which we like to call it. And, you know, these are companies that focus on specific technologies. They have a core business and they center these technologies around their core and then use AI to help provide a market-leading approach to their offering. And here, you know, two examples I can think of are something like Accenture or Salesforce. And then, you know, perhaps another theme or subcategory, if you like, is the facilitator. You know, and these are the companies that provide the infrastructure that make AI work, if you like. So Constellation Energy has been a really great winner for us in that theme. And Qantas Services, you know, is another example.
That takes a point, and I like that. It's the trailblazers, utilizers, authority, and facilitators is understanding how the pieces fit together. Because I was reminded, you know, 25 years ago, a website gave a business an edge. Now, everyone's got a website. I've got a website. AI is going to sort of be absolutely ubiquitous, but it's understanding how it's going to fit in with different companies, how they're going to, in essence, implement it to get that real value from it.
Well, exactly. I mean, I've just come back from a conference where, you know, amongst other things, AI was being discussed and showcased. And, you know, the depth and breadth of this is enormous, Simon. And I really think it's going to define markets, you know, and investments for some time to come. But of course, you know, many companies are enthusiastic and excited about its potential, but they still want to see it how it's actually going to help them in the real world and where the dollars or rands, if you like, that they spend are justified by the returns that they see. Now, I mean, for the most part, all the fanfare at the moment is around, you know, language learning models where, you know, the world's data is being consumed in order to create the AI brain, if you like. And then the next phase is going to move on to, you know, what's been referred to as inference, where AI uses its brain to then draw conclusions or make predictions based on available evidence or data that it already has. And obviously, as an investor, I mean, there are opportunities that exist across both spheres.
We must remember, I mean, AI has been around for a while. I mean, you know, we've had it, machine learning, et cetera. But I mean, ChatGPT isn't even yet 3 years old for the public. We are very much early days. We'll leave it there. It's Craig and Tony, CIO, Anbro Capital Investments. Always appreciate the insights.
The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Thomas Brennan. He's CEO and co-founder of Frank. Thomas, appreciate the time this morning. July, Savings Month, and I was digging into it earlier in the week. I think it's our 24th edition of Savings Month, yet the conversation remains much the same. We're not saving enough. We can't retire, too much debt. It's almost depressing in a sense.
Agreed. The problem remains. And actually, if you read the latest statistics, we have a negative savings rate, which means people are spending more than they earn, which is a very tragic reality.
And the stark reality is, I mean, we talk around investing, we talk around savings. They serve different purposes. They are different. Investing more intimidating. Savings should be easier. It should be more familiar to us as individuals.
Agreed. But I think the reality is people have limited options. You know, you can either save with your bank account, but if you want immediate access to your money, very often, you know, your money is probably actually losing value, not only because it's not beating inflation in terms of interest, but also because some of the fees that are being deducted from your account. A lot of people are sold a free savings account, not realizing, obviously, that comes with a bank account that are fees attached. So we're trying to change that, obviously, by providing an emergency savings account, which is powered fundamentally by Allan Gray Money Market Fund, which obviously beats inflation by quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And we've also built the ability for people to be able to access their money in real time. So same day withdrawals effectively, which I think can hopefully be a game changer. So people can put their money into a safe place that is in some way separated from their bank account, you know, knowing that there are demands on that, but access it whenever they need.
I want to get into some of the details in a moment. You mentioned an emergency fund. That, I imagine, should be the first port of call for somebody who is starting to save.
Agreed. And I think what's important to know is that you have to fundamentally tick that box before you can think long term. Because if you're putting money into a savings or an investment vehicle thinking for the long term, but you don't have any emergency savings, when something comes around, you know, what is the behavior? People then tend to withdraw from that long term investment, which is the wrong thing to do, especially if you invested in something like, you know, an index tracking ETF or the stock market. So for everyone, it's kind of, you know, our constant advice is get under your belt 3 months worth of expenses in a easy to access emergency savings fund.
Is 3 months that magic number for somebody who's building that emergency fund?
I think it is. I mean, it's a starting point that I think, you know, should be easy enough for most people to wrap their head around. You know, really good sound advice is, you know, for somebody who's hypothetically a creative, you know, working as a videographer or photographer, you know, picking up jobs wherever they can, they'd probably want to actually move closer towards 6 to 9 months of their expenses because you've got that variable income. But for, you know, people where there is a reliable source of income, I think 3 months is a great starting point. The other thing just to mention is obviously if you make that bar too high, sometimes even that can be intimidating. Yeah. How am I ever going to be able to get, whatever, 100,000 rand in an account? Like that's almost impossible for a lot of people to contemplate. So by, you know, bringing the target a little bit lower makes it more accessible, I think, for many people.
That's actually a great point. It's the psychology of the money. And frankly, maybe, you know, target 1 month. And when you get to one, make it two, then make
it
three.
Exactly, push it out.
Yeah, push it out. It's about that, you know, to quote Nike, it's about just starting. A lot of folks will say, well, I don't have much. I got 100. I got 200 rand. It, you know, to your point, maybe I need 50 or 100. Just start is so hugely important. It will gain momentum in time.
100%. And I obviously, you know, the minimums is a critical issue and one that, you know, we try to tackle head on as Frank by removing those minimums. So, you know, if you go to Allan Gray as a retail investor, they'll ask you for 50,000 rand as an opening account balance, which very few people can afford. Whereas, you know, through Frank, you can access, which it's a quality product, the Allan Gray Money Market Fund, but you can access it from 5 rand. So completely agree. Even if you've got 5, 10, 50, you know, start saving. It's a habit. And once you can see the benefit coming through of having a growing store of something that you can access whenever you want, I believe that's the start of good habit formation.
It is those habits. And I want to touch on that, but I want to come back to liquidity, to fees, to rates. In some sense, you know, if you were getting zero interest, that's not the end of the world, but more is better. Higher than inflation is better. But also that liquidity you spoke about, saving into an ETF is not saving, it's investing. And you know, back in April, our market was down 20%, which meant your saving was, you need to be in the right product and it needs to give you that ability to access it quickly. And that's what you're talking around with this product.
Exactly, 100%. And so rather don't take any risk with your emergency savings and make sure that you can access it whenever you want. You know, and fundamentally, you know, we advise a money market fund because you get the high interest from Rand One and you can access your money. And then investing is a different beast, right? It allows you to think longer term. It allows you to take on board a little bit of risk.
Yeah, it is a different beast. I like that. You've also, in a recent article you're writing, you found that sort of accountability, gamification, these actually help with success. And I know, and I remember way back in the day, sort of a savings club where I think there were four of us and we would each check in, did you put your whatever it was? Accountability can really, really help as long as you find the right group of people.
100%. And we're trying to like kind of build on that idea of community. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Stockfell coming together, encouraging each other to build that habit. I mean, you see it with exercise and the likes of applications like Strava. As a business, we've got a running club now. And it's been amazing to see people who have never run in their life starting to run regularly simply because of that sort of collective encouragement. So I think there's a lot of power in having a group of people around you. We already have something called a shared goal, which allows you to set up an investment goal, target. Could be with your spouse, could be with a group of friends, whatever the case may be. But you have that collective visibility of people coming together and allowing you to kind of say, come on, you know, we can do this together. Like, come on, put that, you know, don't spend that cash, save it.
It's also the rewarding of the success. It's also when you're out and it's like, I don't know, one more burger, one more drink. It's like, hang on, that's, you know, 30, 50, 100 bucks that you could be saving. Gamification, is that something that you work with? I was digging around some of the sort of US apps, although they are more investment than saving, and they seem to be leaning quite big into that process.
Yeah, we are. I mean, you may be aware of some of the really alarming statistics that are coming out around online gambling.
Yeah.
I think the tragedy in South Africa is, you know, with the really low rate of financial literacy, not really appreciating, you know, negative expected return, which is what happens with online gambling. Mm-hmm. So you're getting this rush of like, yeah, there's a possibility here that my money can win. So we are trying to leverage that. We've got a save to win opportunity in our sort of emergency savings account, mm-hmm. where every month we run a lottery. And, you know, in savings month in particular, we're giving 5,000 rand away to, you know, to a lucky few people who are committed to saving. And the way it works is simply the amount of money. There's a little bit of sort of a card flipping, you know, making it fun so you can multiply the amount that you've deposited as mm-hmm. much by 10 times. So, yeah, I mean, I fully believe that, you know, we do respond to incentives. The question is, you know, how can you make those incentives meaningful?
Yeah.
You know, that don't drive the wrong behavior. In fact, you want to drive the right behavior.
You mentioned online gambling. I think it's an absolute scourge on our society. I mean, part of it is because we have insane poverty in this economy, but also it is the, with respect to folks who are out there gambling, it is around that literacy, understanding the actual process. And that then comes to the point, the huge importance just around education. And you've got an academy in that regard as well, just to help people with something which, you know, you and I might think is obvious, but it's obvious to us now, but it wasn't always.
100%. And what I'm really proud about, actually, and obviously using AI, which is now becoming more and more pervasive, taking that content, which is, you know, I mean, unfortunately, who wants to read a lesson online, you know?
Yeah.
So you have now the tools where you can turn a lesson into a conversation between two people that really understand and trying to unpack certain concepts. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think, hopefully going to be transformative and just allowing people to learn about money in a simple way on the bus to work or in the taxi to work or in the train, where it's engaging, it's entertaining, it's tapping into what we need, which is somebody explaining financial matters in simple language that's accessible.
Yeah, this isn't rocket science, but you have to learn it. At some point, none of us knew it. We all had to learn it at some point. We'll leave it there. That's Thomas Brennan. He's CEO, co-founder. Frank, appreciate the time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Some Friday thoughts for me on the Hyprop deal to sell their Hyde Park corner. Firstly, the buyer is only at this point buying half of the shopping center, but there is a call and put structure in place, which means that in a period, either the buyer can force the purchase of the other half, or the seller, in this case Hyprop, can force the sale of the remaining half. I can't imagine that's not going to happen. I don't think you particularly want to own only half a shopping center. And Jimmy Moyoha, when I was chatting to him about the deal earlier in the week, he made a great point. These sort of large assets don't sell that easy all that often. And it got me thinking. The announcement from HighProp, and I quote, said, company strategy to allocate more capital to the Western Cape, Eastern Europe, and focus on regional malls rather than mid-sized malls. And my question then is, their other mall that they have up here in Johannesburg is Rosebank Mall. I live in Rosebank. Rosebank Mall is my local. It's a great mall. Absolutely is a great mall. But there are a lot of empty shops, especially down at the bottom by the cinemas. There's been a lot of churn since the pandemic. And I can't help wondering, is this potentially also for sale? It is a much larger, it's about twice the size in terms of gross lettable area compared to Hyde Park Corner. So it does fit into that capital, into that space where they talk around regional rather than mid-sized malls. Also, if it was for sale, you certainly wouldn't say anything, right? Because that would give the buyers more negotiating power. I remember when BHP put together a strategy document over 10 years ago, and looking at it, none of the strategy mentioned South Africa. They didn't talk around selling the assets because, well, you don't want to sort of alert the market to it. And yeah, selling Rosebank Mall is not going to be easy, but at the right price, I can't help thinking that HighProp would absolutely sell at the right price, and that then give them that focus, Western Cape and Eastern Europe. That's it for today. I was chatting with Kia Nyonyana yesterday, Scope Prime. We touched on the rand, and I asked the simple question, where do you think it's heading in the months ahead? Almost half of you said weaker, back above 18. Over a third said stronger from here. The rest were saying no idea. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. The show will be back again Monday. Dudu will be standing in.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.